Polyamory is the practice or desire to have relationships with more than one individual, where all individuals are consenting to this. No other primates actually practice monogamy, and monogamy is very rarely found in nature. Only 17% of human cultures actually practice monogamy, and research has recently found that polyamory is on the rise, with 1 in 5 adults in the US reporting to practicing consensually non-monogamous relationships. In today's episode of Private Stories, I speak with Adam Lyons, a well-known dating coach. Adam discusses his polyamorous relationships as well as his early life experiences of abuse and contemplating suicide. After a difficult early life of feeling rejected by females, Adam decided he was going to master the art of how to attract women. He used this as a motivation to take control over his life. Adam gained great insight into human behavior and started to understand why his previous relationships fell apart. Adam discusses in detail the polyamorous relationship that he's currently in, as well as previous polyamorous relationships that he was involved in. I want to go back to early life for you and what you witnessed when you were growing up. What were relationships around you like in your childhood?
Yeah, I mean, I came from a divorced parent home situation, so like it's always like a broken home. My mom separated from my dad by cheating on him. And then my mom separated on my stepdad by cheating on him. My mom's been married to her third husband now for, you know, ever since then.
So there was a lot of infidelity that you were watching. So you're kind of, what you were picking up on about relationships is that actually people can't really be faithful.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say, it's fascinating. I wouldn't say that it's that people can't be faithful, because I definitely had friends like my aunt. I mean, she's still married to the same person she met. So I definitely witnessed the alternate. I think it's more that I just knew that it didn't always mean forever. And yeah. I think it was a more practical outlook. I didn't have the glossy, oh, wow, marriage is perfect and you're going to marry the first person, everything's going to be great. But I also didn't have the everyone's horrible, everyone's going to cheat on each other.
Yeah.
It was just some people that are willing to put in the work can make a monogamous relationship work if that's what they want. And other people that can't make that work, rather than cheating, should probably just state that they want to be polyamorous.
Yeah.
And
so from an early age, did you start to see relationships in a slightly different way and maybe think outside the box a little bit?
I was such a nerd back. I'm still a nerd. I'm wearing my Dungeons & Dragons t-shirt. I love this thing. But I was such a nerd. I just didn't really get any social interactions. I got bullied as a kid really badly. And I got attacked numbers of times. There was, at one point, 20 kids grabbed me in an alley and just beat me up and left me. Like, it was rough. So I didn't really have confidence with women at all. And
see you when you were young, when you were teenage years? How do you feel that you were perceived by females?
Awkward, shy, unattractive. I was often called like the ugly smart kid. And which made me rebel against education. You know, we were talking about this earlier. It's one of the reasons I didn't finish. I started 6 months of university and then walked out because I didn't want to be smart, because smart was unattractive.
Yeah.
My GCSEs, I got every single grade was like a C or higher. But my highest was a B, but I didn't study at all. I just walked in and aced everything. I was skipping school for the last year and a half because I didn't want to get bullied in the classroom. Wow. And I was like, but I was faking notes from my parents so that it looked legit. Again, like, I was smart enough to dodge the system without getting in trouble. But I was trying to keep myself safe from getting attacked. So
those years were really tough for you.
I'd say just a little bit.
Yeah.
It was tough. Yeah. From the age of 10 to 16, that was a nightmare. I remember walking into my classroom. I got moved. My dad gambled. So I'd got a scholarship into a private school. I would have ended up going to Eton if I'd have gone that route, because I was in the junior school that seeds into Eton, mm-hmm. which of course would have, set me up for life, I suppose. Yeah. But my dad gambled my fees. I'd got the scholarship, but you have to pay a percentage. It was like 10%, but my dad gambled the 10%. So I had to end up moving back to East London with my mom. And once I went there, I went to a regular school. I literally went from studying trigonometry I remember the very first question in class was 2 + 3. And I was studying trig a week before. And I was just like, I was done. Like, I was like, yep, I'm over this. This all sucks. And the very first word a kid said to me in my class is like, wow, you're the new CUNT joining our class. Welcome to hell. We're going to make your life feel like it. And
oh my gosh,
that was true until I was 16. And then
what were your early experiences with women like, or girls? Like?
That was a woman that said that, to put it in perspective.
Yeah. So even girls were bullying you.
Yeah. Oh, it was predominantly women. It wasn't men. They thought it was fun to like kick me in the testicles as I walked down the corridor. Thought it was fun to get the bigger guys in the older classes to beat me up so they could, you know, show off. I mean, it was rough. It was really rough. I joined the Dungeons and Dragons Club and they wouldn't let me play with them because they didn't want the negative social impact. So I was allowed to watch people play Dungeons and Dragons at lunchtime. That was my life.
Oh my gosh. So then getting with girl, did you have these kind of awkward situations with females initially?
The most awkward situation. So when I was 18 is really when I met like my first real girlfriend. We dated for a week, went to the movies, and I was just like, this girl's amazing. And her friends broke up with me. They contacted me and said, hey, just so you know, you're not cool enough for her, so she's dumping you. And she was like, yeah, my friend said I can't date you. Or they won't be my friend. So that was rough, but that was like teenage stuff, right? Then I met somebody else at a party. That was when I had my sort of like first real, I'm going to say consensual sexual experience, because there were definitely previous non-consensual sexual experiences that probably shouldn't dive deep on in this. But my first consensual sexual experience.
But that must also, the fact there was non-consensual sexual experience, and it sounds like there was some sexual abuse in your mm-hmm. past. That must have also had an impact on you and relationships and how you viewed sex.
Yeah, I was forced by a woman when I was 8 into a number of inappropriate situations. Yeah, so again, gosh. Lots of negativity around women.
Not only will women bully me and put me down and be horrible, but actually they'll completely violate me as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I dated a woman for like 3 months and I was shocked. She was beautiful. I was shocked that she was into me. And then it turned out that she had a pretty bad lifelong STD. And so she'd been rejected by a lot of people because of that. Mm. And so that relationship sort of like fell apart at that point because I was like, I don't know if that's what I want.
Yeah.
And it was cool. She was like really upfront with it. And, you know, but I just felt like that was why she wanted me. It wasn't really me. And she was, looking back, she was physically abusive as well. I would like allow her to hit me in public and things like that. It was just not a good relationship. So I'm actually proud that I had the guts to get out of it. Yeah. And then I met another woman, who I dated for like 6 months, and she was great. Like everything about her was wonderful. And then for my 19th birthday, she wanted to give me a threesome for my birthday. So she had a best friend and, I was literally, we were going to go to a club. And then we're going to come home and have a threesome. That was the plan. It was all set out. Yeah, Becky, this will blow you away. And as I was leaving the door, my mom got in a fight with my stepdad. This was when they were separating. And she told me to stay to make sure he didn't hit her. And so I stayed and I said to the two girls, you guys go without me and I'll catch up, which is really stupid looking back, but whatever, I did it. So I waited at home for about an hour. My mom and stepdad separated from each other and it looked good. So I went to go to the venue and, they didn't pick up their phones. I spent the whole night hanging out in this nightclub on my 19th birthday, phoning and texting and nothing. So at about midnight, I gave up and just came home. And it turns out that they got flirting with the bus driver on the way to the nightclub. He took the night off and they gave him my threesome.
Wow.
And so the next morning I broke up with my girlfriend over it. And I was like, I just don't even know the words to describe.
Just like more betrayal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that was about it in terms of relationship. Then there was really three other women I dated between then and 26. One of whom she attempted to commit suicide 3 times altogether. She was mentally unstable. I took her to hospital each time. And after the third time, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm sorry. The second one refused to acknowledge my existence because she was Indian and I wasn't. And so her family couldn't know that I exist. I actually went to her father on his deathbed, she wanted her dad to meet me before she passed away. And she told him that she loved me more than anything in the world. And her dad gave her a blessing. And I was at the funeral, and then her mom told her that she didn't give a blessing. And so we separated.
Wow. The amount of rejection that you experience. I mean, this is so traumatic.
There was definitely a rock bottom moment that was the deciding factor.
What was the rock bottom moment?
I was going to commit suicide. I had got everything ready, and it was the first night I went out to practice meeting women.
How old were you?
And I was 26.
Gosh.
And I had everything at home, and I basically was going to go and test out like the whole dating thing. And my theory was really simple. If it didn't work, I would just come home and end my life. If I saw any sign that it could improve or it could get better, I would give it 24 hours. I would try again the next day, and I would keep going until I saw a sign that it was just bullshit and that you couldn't improve your dating life. And then I was just going to end my life because I was done.
So you were in that much pain that because you really felt women did not accept you, life was not worth living.
I was done. Yeah. My last girlfriend that I was with, she was cheating on me with a man she met at church, and I was letting it happen because I didn't want to be single. And then she was just screaming at me and shouting at me. It was just an abusive relationship. So I broke up with her. And while I was at work, she brought her new boyfriend to my house and took everything. PlayStation, TV, everything. Shower curtain, she took everything. I came home to an empty apartment, to no girlfriend, after she was the one that was being abusive and she'd been cheating on me for 6 months. And I was just done. I was like, I have nothing. I didn't have the money to buy it back. Like I didn't even have a TV. I was done.
God.
And I was like, yep, this is it. And so, but I'd learned about like the ability to meet people, that it was possible that you could date someone. And I was like, I'm going to go and give it a try. And so I tested it. And actually, the community, it was the old school pickup community. And I thought it was all bullshit. And it was, I really hated it. But there was something in what they were doing. There was obviously some results, but it wasn't consistent. And what I thought they were doing was wrong. So I decided to look into what it was. And I'm a pattern observer. I can't, humans in general like patterns, but for me, they stand out like a sore thumb. And that's because, obviously there was child abuse in my past from parents and from other situations. But people that are in abusive situations tend to be really good at spotting patterns, because you have to know when the abuser walks in the room, if you need to leave because you're going to get hit, or if you can stay. So, I needed to work out, is my mom going to pick up an ashtray and throw it at my head, or am I going to be okay? And so because of that, I could see the patterns in when people were succeeding and when they were failing. And a lot of the things that people felt were working, things like the negging and all that stuff, actually weren't. But there were other subtleties that were far more important that were having an impact. And so I started recording those. And that's
the negging and stuff is very effective with insecure people, because insecure people will tolerate being mistreated, but confident, secure people are going to walk away.
Right. But what I learned was that you don't need negging to get somebody to hang out. Like the negging itself was actually not doing anything to benefit the situation. So it was a litmus test. If I talk to somebody who has low self-esteem and I neg them and they're willing to keep talking to me, they probably are attracted to me. But there are better tests to identify if somebody's already attracted to you than negging. And what it did was it gave men who were negging the security, oh, tick, this person likes me, I'll keep going. But actually, you could just have not negged and they would have still liked you.
Yeah.
And so I started trying to look for what are the key things that actually make somebody attractive. And I got really deep into it. I found over 51 what I called signs of attraction, like physical body language cues to let you know if somebody's interested in you. I started monitoring the frequency of those signs and spotting a correlation. To the point that it's weird. I can do this creepy thing now where I can go to a bar with friends. They always get me to do it. It's funny. And I can predict what two people are going to do if they're like flirting with each other before they do it. So I'll be like, within 10 seconds, he'll reach his hand out and touch the small of her back. And it happens. And everyone's like, you're psychic. I'm like, no, it's not. It's just there are pre-patterns before anybody does it.
And so very in tune with.
Yeah, it's fun. And that really became, a key part of like what I teach and what I do nowadays. But yeah, I just got constant improvement every time I went out. I wasn't like meeting people and taking them home, but I was definitely, oh, that was fun. Or, oh, that was a cool person. Oh, that was a phone number. And so I was like, oh, I'll kill myself tomorrow. And it got to a point where 3 months later, I just didn't want to kill myself anymore.
Wow. You know, so it was either, I'm going to master this with women and women are going to like me. I'm going to be able to attract them, or I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah. Basically,
wow. And I mean, it sounds like in that there was actually a lot of motivation to change your life around, because the mm-hmm. alternative was so
yeah awful. And then that's when the forgiveness for my past came, because I started realizing why people did things and sympathizing. Like, I understand why my ex cheated on me. Like, I got it. Like, I wasn't being interesting in the bedroom, so she was getting that fulfillment from elsewhere, and then I was pining for her rather than standing up for myself. So I just started looking back and seeing all sorts of stuff. Like, my mom was seeking intimacy through sex and validation and putting down me and other people around us to make her feel good, because she actually had an inferiority complex. Once I started piecing these things together, it made it okay. You know, my dad was physically abusive because my dad's scared of people. Like, okay, I get it. Like, so it's easier to pick on a child. So I just started seeing these patterns. And then I didn't have any hatred or animosity towards people in my past anymore. Instead, it was just understanding, kind of felt bad for them.
Was the hedonistic stage to kind of fix all of what you've been through before? Because it sounds like you'd been through so much crap that it gave you motivation to take complete control of your life, just to kind of make everything good.
Yeah, the hedonistic stage was actually probably the most healthy mental thing I could have done. Which is funny, because it's the thing that the media loves to judge me for. Yeah. But it was because I refused to get into a relationship until I learned what a healthy relationship was. And I was meeting people as often as possible, being very open and honest with them, and basically learning from scratch how to interact with people.
And taking control and making sure that it was no longer painful for you, and that you were no longer being abused, mistreated, rejected.
Yeah, it was key. And then there was one other woman after that. I ended up living in Africa for some time on a work project, and she was great. We connected really well. Everything about us was great. She was a genuine nymphomaniac. I've only met one. At this point in life, Becky, I've slept with over 1,000 women at this point.
Over 1,000?
At this point, yeah.
Wow, that's quite a number.
It's quite a number. I stopped counting at 30, but every so often I'll like backtrack and try and keep track, and I'll calculate it by days and stuff like that. But it's over 1,000 at least. You know, I mean, this year alone, since my separation, my number's gone, you know.
I guess you've always had freedom, right? Because when you have been, I mean, I guess there was your marriage was monogamous. Was your marriage mm-hmm. monogamous? And then after your marriage
was completely monogamous. Yeah.
And then after your marriage, you've had freedom in your relationships. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you were in the polyamorous relationship, the main one, was there also room to then bring other partners in? And was there also other partners coming into
the... Yeah, we definitely experimented with other partners as well, but not as frequent. We used to call ourselves a closed poly triad, which was really the best way of wording it. It was just the three of us. We were all dating each other, and we were all polyamorous, but we were all just with each other. And we would sometimes experiment with other people, but it was very, very rare. It was more about the three of us, because at that point children were involved, and you know, having strangers around kids is not the best. And even now, nobody comes to like, we have this plot of land. We live on 44 acres with the two homes. Mm-hmm. We use one house as an office, which is where I'm filming this. And then the other house is the one that we live in. And this is the one I'm actually in my ex-girlfriend's old bedroom. We turned it into my office. But no one comes to the land. We don't bring people back here. We have another house that is for adults.
And so you're currently in a polyamorous situation.
I think technically I'm still in a polyamorous relationship, actually. It's been a fun one. So when I was living in London, you know, I led quite a hedonistic lifestyle. I was going to nightclubs a lot. I was, in fact, organizing a lot of the London nightlife at the time. And there was a point I found myself, previous to that, when, you know, before I got into dating, I was single, and I was so desperate to hold on to a relationship that every time I got into a relationship, I would basically commit myself to them in every way. Like, you know, oh, I'll pay for everything. I'll do everything. I won't have any female friends. And it just killed every relationship I ever got to. So I went through a period of time when I was studying dating and learning, you know, how it all works, where I refused to get into a relationship. But what happens is naturally you're meeting people, you're getting connections, and obviously physical intimacy is a thing. And so I found myself physically intimate with up to 14 women at a time.
Wow.
And yeah, it was wild times. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of multi-person, experiences. And it was great. I loved it. I loved that period of my life. But I found it very unfulfilling. And that's because there was no emotional intimacy or depth to the relationships. It was really just, physical, gratification. And while, there were still dates and there were dinners and there was other things, there was no depth to the relationship. It was never going to be anything more than surface level. And so I decided I wanted to try monogamy. So I met a wonderful woman. I actually said to my friend, I'm going to marry the next beautiful woman that walks in the room. And I actually ended up marrying the next beautiful woman that walked in the room. She was American, and it's actually how I ended up living in America. I was happily married for 4 years. We were engaged for a year and dated for a year before that. So it was a 6-year relationship. And we had a big disconnect over children. When we first got together, we said we'd have children within 3 to 5 years. Once we hit the 3-year mark, I brought it up again and she goes, can we wait another year? So I was like, sure. We got to the 4-year mark and she's like, look, I think I'm more 5 to 10 years. And I said, hey, just so you know, when we got together, it was a hard boundary of a relationship of 3 to 5. And she's like, yeah, I know. She goes, but I'm more 5 to 10. I was like, I don't think you understand hard boundary. I was like, hard boundary means I'm out if it's longer than 5. And she was a Ford model from New York. And she said the words, I'm too beautiful for you to divorce. And I sent her papers and I divorced her over it. And at the end of that, she's still a very good friend of mine. We're still in touch. We were really good friends. There was a reason we got married. But I wanted kids and she decided that she didn't. A key element to her, as she said, was a lot of her value was based on her physical beauty and she didn't want to lose it through having a child. So I understand, but it's just not what I wanted in my life. Mm. So after that, I kind of decided that I wanted to explore alternate types of relationships. I'd enjoyed the multi-person physical intimacy. And I had a close friend at the time who already had a child. And, she was a really good friend of mine. She knew my wife. She was kind of like there for me through the divorce. And she was like, hey, we should date. In fact, my wife suggested that we start dating. And I'd already kind of like been in her son's life as a friend. And we came up with the idea of co-parenting. And it was just thrown about, not necessarily that we would date, but just that we would co-parent and that would get me my kid, whether I had a relationship or not. And I liked the idea. And she was predominantly into women at the time. She wasn't really into men.
Yeah.
And she said to me, I love you. And I was like, oh, I love you too. And she's like, no, I mean, I love you. Like I've fallen in love with you over the years of our friendship. She's like, I would date you, like, absolutely. And I thought about it. I was like, oh yeah, this is my best friend. She loves women. I was like, I'm down. And she goes, but I won't give up women for you. And as quick as you can, without even missing a beat, I was like, well, I'm not giving them up for you then. And that started the polyamorous relationship. So we would go out and we met multiple women. There were many times where we would take large groups of women to bed with us and we'd be, having wonderful times while also raising children and discussing having our own kid. And that's when we met my other partner. And it was really the two of them, first of all. In fact, that night that we all got together, it was my friend, or my best friend who I was dating, and the woman she met who we ended up being in a relationship with, and I ended up taking the waitress to bed randomly. And so we had like a four-way, but it was really 2 and 2. And then we kind of all got together, but we just kept seeing each other. And we dated the waitress for a while, funny enough, and then that didn't really work out. And then we ended up in a relationship with the woman I'm with now. And the relationship lasted, 7 years. I mean, it was a very real, very deep polyamorous relationship. It got covered by the media. They even made a cartoon in Taiwan about us randomly.
What was the early stages of the relationship like? Was there a lot of trying to negotiate how it was all going to work and where you were going to live and whether you were going to live together or not? And what were the rules? What were the boundaries? Or was it actually very straightforward to agree on?
It was just like a regular relationship. It was myself and my first partner. We were living in an apartment and we were visiting the other lady. And I remember the key point when it turned into a deep relationship, like there was sex all the way through. But when it turned into a deep relationship was the young lady, the woman I'm currently dating, her name's Eve. Eve was working a 10-hour shift for minimum wage. And then at the end of the shift, she went to her other job where she got paid a decent salary, but she needed both to make ends meet in Los Angeles because it was, you know, it's hard to succeed and she was living in Hollywood. Yeah. And so she was looking at pulling off like realistically an 18-hour day. And she was drained and tired. And we could just see it in the text messages. It just wasn't the woman we were used to. So we packed everything up. We went to her favorite restaurant, bought all her favorite food and rocked up at her work with all her favorite food for lunch in the middle of the night. And she was just in tears. And that was it. That was like the bonding moment. That's when we realized we were three. And after that, Eve was like, look, I'm moving out of my apartment. It's too expensive. There's better places that are nicer. And she's like, I make good money. It's not like I don't make a lot of money. It's just Hollywood's expensive. And she doesn't need to be there anymore. You know, she's already kind of like got her career under her belt. And we needed a bigger place because we were going to have a kid. So we made the decision to just get a big house. So we got a 5-bedroom mansion's the wrong word, but the entire ground floor was a giant Olympic swimming pool. So it was a big, very big house. And we all moved in together in Ventura. And we lived there for a couple of years. And
what was that? It was great. What was the transition like? So going from living with one of your partners to then all three of you being in the house, was it a big thing that you needed to adapt to?
No more than moving into in a regular relationship. Like if you were just a couple, there's no big change there. There were some minor changes. Like for example, body heat was a problem. We realized we needed 2 bed sheets because I didn't need bed sheets because I slept in the middle and the two women either side, their heat radiated so much that I could sleep above the covers. So we realized that 2 bed sheets made more sense. I needed a shelf above the bed for my phone.
Yeah.
Because obviously I didn't have a bedside table. So there were lots of silly things like that.
Like practical things.
Yeah, practical things. We also got into, you know, when you get into a regular relationship, you kind of get into a routine in the bedroom. And that doesn't mean you don't mix it up, but, you know, you got favorite things that you kind of fall into. But, you know, I'd had lots of multi-person sex, but because it was with different people, it was always different. It was always exploratory. But I actually experienced multiple threesomes, you know, every single night, sometimes twice a day. And we got into a routine on threesomes, which was kind of an interesting thing. So my favorite sexual position actually involves 2 people and it's impossible to do without it. So, you know, these unique elements that just came up. And then, you know, there was issues of judgment. You know, I had my aunt try to give me shade about what was going on and you know, people being like, oh, what about the children? And we'd be like, who has sex in front of their children? You know, like that's just weird. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, yeah, in front of the kids, we're just 3 adults in the same room. And they were like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like in their weird mind, I suppose, they think there's some kind of sordid act going on. But no, like I don't think our kids for many years ever realized that it was anything different. Like it was just 3 parents that loved them and loved each other. Practically, it was great because it meant we always had a babysitter and we could still do dates as a 2. So we would alternate and take it in turns at night and everyone got time off. When, you know, we had, during the time that we were all together, 3 children were born. In each occasion, one of the mothers would get their own bedroom with the child and the rest of us, like we had like a 2 or I would take over looking after the kids and the 2 women would go on a date and get their nails done. And yeah, it was an incredible relationship.
Was there ever any issues with jealousy with 3 people trying to have a relationship together?
The jealousy that came in was not the kind of jealousy you'd expect. It's the same jealousy you'd get with like friends where, I'm sad that you 2 get to do this thing and I can't because I've got a work commitment. It was never about sex because sex was always available to all of us all the time. You know, like, in fact, I think for the women, it was almost better because I tend to find that in a relationship, most women will be happy with sex maybe 3 to 4 times a week. Most men will be more happy with it once or twice a day. And with 2 women, I was always sexually satisfied. Like it made no difference. It was a perfect match. And so it was a mixture of threesomes or you know, with each other or the 2 girls, they tended to be more into romantic intimacies. So they would do things like movie dates and, you know, get the nails done and stuff. That was more their kind of thing, hugging and kissing. But when I was involved, that's when sex tended to be, you know, that's when it went down.
So you're saying that it seems like everyone was actually getting their needs met better because there was more people to try and meet their needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was actually a bigger match. And, you know, I mean, you know this, like if we look back at human society, you know, if we go back, you know, tens of thousands of years, we were more of a group. That's kind of more how we operated. And there's, you know, I've seen, especially as a parent, that the bond between grandchildren and children is crazy. And, you know, that makes a lot of sense because it would be the adults that had to still go out and hunt and achieve whatever they had to achieve, with the grandparents having done that already are better suited in the role of raising the children. And so there's a lot of these elements that you see as a father and that you see when, you know, you understand social relationships the way that we are. You know, once you can get past, look, here's what I think it is. Like, I think a lot of jealousy when it comes to sex comes to ownership. It's like, this is my vagina or this is my penis, right? I own it and I don't want anyone else to have it. And then once you get into that thing, but you're really trying to claim ownership over another human being, which is not right at all. And this concept was really given to us by religion, but it gets deep seated because it's affecting us in our formative years. You know, when you're a child, you watch movies that show us that, you know, oh, this is true love. This is a marriage. This is normal. And you end up, like, because they're your formative years, that becomes fact. And as you become an adult, it becomes very hard to move away from that. It's, you know, many people have said it's one of the reasons why it's so hard for us to move away from things like religion or spirituality, because it hits us in our formative years. When it comes to, you know, but actual, if we were talking about humans being monogamous, right? Because there's a big argument, humans, you know, but we're naturally monogamous. If we were naturally monogamous, cheating wouldn't exist. If we were naturally,
I was just going to say that with the clients that I help work through infidelity, we always have to have honesty and transparency, and that's where the healing comes. And actually, in your situation, there is the transparency and there is the honesty. So actually, the jealousy is potentially not what a lot of people would imagine.
Yeah, it is. But it is, like, I would be the one that got jealous most of the time. I was jealous that they would get to sit indoors and watch TV while I had to go to do work. You know, I'd go on like a weekend trip and I'd be jealous that they were at home. And there was absolute jealousy that came, like, if I could take one of them on a work trip and the other one had to stay with the kids, jealousy kicked in. But it wasn't about sex. It was about being left at home with the children, which is understandable. So that was where the issues really came about. And then towards the end, it was actually myself and my original partner, the woman that I'd agreed to co-parent with. We were the two that had the bigger issues. The two women, they stopped being intimate towards the last 18 months of the relationship, but that's because two of our children were born back to back. And during pregnancy, both partners had a decreased interest in sex. Yeah. And that's with me, with everyone. They just, you know, didn't feel right. But they definitely didn't feel right with each other either. You know, they didn't want to have, there's lots of juices going on, and, you know, they didn't want some space there, I suppose, was what they were talking about. So there was an 18-month intimacy disconnect, and that had fundamentally shifted their relationship anyway. And they became more like roommates towards the end. Mm-hmm. But myself and the first person I was dating, we started to have some real conflicts come up. And it was, there were a lot of different reasons for it. And, you know, a large part of that, I think, is, you know, people change as they get older. And that conflict was just happening more and more often. And one of the reasons why we were friends and we didn't just date initially was because I knew that we had a potential to have conflicts, even as friends. There were certain situations that we just didn't agree on, political views and a few other big concepts. And so towards the end of the relationship, these ideals, especially over the last, you know, 4 years with all the turmoil in America and what's going on in the political climate, you know, it definitely brought a lot of things to head. And so we made a decision that rather than keep arguing in front of the children, we would make a decision to separate. We did a trial separation for like 6 months, where we didn't announce anything. We kept it all private, but she moved out and we tested. I'm fortunate enough at this point in life, I'm very successful. I own two homes on the same plot of land, and I have a few other homes that are more investment properties. But she moved into the other home. So we were literally separated by don't know, 20 meters. Mm-hmm. But we were in definite separate houses. And, you know, we tried a couple of times with me sleeping with her in that house to see if it was there, but it was an argument every time. It was almost guaranteed. And so just made sense for the children to do a real separation. And we announced it publicly. And then, because we'd already kind of been separated for like 6 months, I'd already, you know, started thinking about, okay, what am I going to do when this goes public? And I was like, you know, am I going to be monogamous with Eve, who I've been with for 7 years, or am I going to open it up? And me and Eve sat down and we had a deep discussion, and Eve was like, look, she's like, you know, I like having fun with you and, you know, meeting other people. And she goes, but more importantly, she goes, I know how much you love it. And so she's like, I just want to make it clear that I'm not expecting you to just be with me. And if you want to meet other people, like, I'm down, I'm in for it.
And it so, sounds like communication was so key in these relationships, that whatever, no matter who you've been in a relationship with, that actually you've chosen to be in a relationship with very open-minded people, but actually they've been very forthcoming with communicating about whatever your needs are. And rather than your partner shutting these conversations down, it sounds like it's always been safe to really bring whatever your needs are.
Yeah, it's like one of the most important parts. So so right now I'm still with Eve, who is probably described as my primary partner. But there's definitely been others since the separation. But, you know, in the same way that when you first start dating somebody, you don't want to put it on your social media. The last time I announced I was in a polyamorous relationship, I ended up on, you know, all over the Daily Mail and on almost every major website that covered the news around the world. When we separated, we ended up on the Daily Mail again. And so,
good old Daily Mail. You know,
yeah, exactly. And of course, once you're on the Daily Mail, you're everywhere.
So can't get rid of that.
Yeah, exactly. So long story short, I'm definitely seeing other people right now. You know, me and Eve have definitely been on dates with other women. We've definitely been intimate with other women. And there is definitely the same name coming up time and time again, mm-hmm. but nobody that I would feel confident or comfortable enough putting them in the limelight of what it can mean to be in a relationship with me.
Do you think that in the future you might bring someone in that would be an equal to Eve, or have you made decisions about the possibilities for the future?
Yeah, good question. Me and Eve have definitely spoken about it at length. For somebody to come in to be an equal to Eve, they would need to be in a relationship with both of us, mm-hmm. for like 7 to 10 years. It would be a very special human being that could do that.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's off record, but you can't just turn up and then be an equal.
Yeah.
There's years of being parents, years of running a business together, years of other relationships, years of sex and intimacy. There's so much there. If you want to be an equal, that's fine, but you got to earn it. And there's years of sacrifice and tears and pain that we went through. And now, you know, we're multimillionaires with multiple investment properties, with children who we care about. And we have an entire plan for how they're getting raised, and we have investments set aside for them, and all these things we're doing. You know, for the right person to come into this, it's a wonderful scenario. If they're open to poly, they, you know, basically everything will be cared for them financially and great. But if they want to be equal, then they got to grind.
It sounds like it's just like any normal relationship. Like, if you're dating mm-hmm. someone, you can't be there everything straight away. Like, you are just getting to know one another. It takes time to really build something up. And it sounds like it's kind of the same with your situation, that you're not saying never, mm-hmm. but actually someone would have to date both of you, and they would have to really build something up with both of you. And eventually it might become a very equal relationship, but
absolutely, yeah. I mean, we had somebody that put in about 6 months of really good time, and they were sending gifts to Eve and to me, and, you know, like, they'd matched it right, so Eve would come home sometimes and find like large bouquets of flowers, whereas I would come home to naked pictures, right? So they were hitting everything right, and then they just got a little bit too controlling. They were, you know, yeah. same as you might find in a traditional relationship. They were just, you know, they were like little signs of, hey, I need to speak to you right now. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm in a work seminar. And they're like, yeah, but this. I'm like, no, work seminar. And so it was moments like that. And it was like, well, can we talk afterwards? I was like, well, then actually it's the kids' time. And so that was a disconnect. And you know, like, she's an incredible person. And, you know, she's still a very good friend to both me and Eve. But towards the end, there were a few things that were said that were bordering on manipulative tactics.
It sounds like before, what you had before was you had a very equal relationship between the three of you in your previous relationship, but actually Eve is now your primary partner, and it's more likely that new people coming in are not really you're not going to have that equality very easily.
Yeah, it would be very hard. It's not off the books completely. There's definitely still a chance, but it's harder now. You know, I've got 7 years of, you know, 8 years of concentrated relationship with Eve, and she's amazing in so many ways. If only, you know, the fact that she's the mother of my children, and we run a business together, and she's literally my best friend. We spend all our time playing board games together and video games, and she likes sleeping with women with me. I mean, these combinations of things are magical.
Hard to find. Yeah. She ticks all the boxes. Would you ever, if she said to you, I'm ready to do monogamy now, would you do monogamy again?
Yeah, we've spoken about it. Actually, it went the other way. Eve said to me, hey, just so you know, I don't ever want you being monogamous for me. So, you know, and that's, I think that's the sign of two people that really know each other.
Yeah.
You know, like she's actually said it's more important to her that I don't change who I am than anything else. You know, she's like, I know what would happen. She goes, if you became monogamous to me, and she goes, obviously there's part of me that likes the idea of it. She goes, but I know if you did that, she goes, you'd always wonder, you'd always be thinking about other people. And she goes, and I just don't mind sleeping with you with other one. She's like, you know.
Do you ever go, because you have that green card, do you ever go through periods of time where you just don't really bother with other people, but you feel really good to know that
that's
you can?
That's actually exactly what happens. Eve's so good at making me feel fulfilled. There are times where, like, I'll have a date lined up with somebody, and then me and Eve will have had sex in the morning and then sex in the afternoon. And she's like, you know, you can go. And I'm like, no, I don't really want to. It was funny. I show her, you know, my app, and I've got, I don't know, 130 matches or something, and, you know, countless women messaging me to meet up. And there's this one woman, and she's really hot. Like, she's your typical Instagram model, you know, she's got all those pictures. And she's like, hey, I'm really looking forward to meeting tonight. And I was like, sweet, me too. And I was like, what do you want to do? Like, you know, do you have anything specific? And she's like, I mean, I suspect we're going to have sex. And Eve was like, oh my God, that's so forward. And I was like, and she goes, so are you going to see her tonight? I was like, nah. And he's like, why not? She's offering you sex. She's crazy hot. Why would you not? I was like, it always weirds me out when someone's this forward. Or I was like, yeah, but you know, I don't know. Like, I kind of just want to hug you in bed tonight. And she goes, oh my God. She goes, you're so pathetic. But it's funny because I would rather hang out with my girlfriend. And, you know, we were in the middle of watching an anime series on Netflix. So I was like, I kind of just want to watch anime. And she looked at me and she goes, you know, your teenage self would be making fun of you right now. She goes, you're choosing to sit indoors and watch anime rather than having sex with this hot Instagram model. And I was like, I'm still hanging out with a hot girl.
Like you give her so much security. Obviously she's very secure in you sleeping with other people. That's not something that makes her feel insecure or jealous. But actually in her being so free to give you your freedom means actually she gets a lot of security. She knows where you are. She knows what you're doing. And actually you choose her over other women a lot. And
yeah, absolutely. And yeah, like I do regular STD testing. Like I got tested and she just, she popped in earlier actually just before this. And she's like, hey, just so you know, you're all clear from the STD front.
STDs? Because 1,000 women, you must have had a few things from time to time.
Believe it or not, no.
None?
I'm still shocked, but I'm really strict on using protection.
But I mean, herpes, genital warts, you can get without, you know, you can use condoms and still get
things. You can, but like, again, I became super educated about this stuff. So for example, both herpes and genital warts, you can see first. So I have a strict rule of having a shower before having sex with somebody. So in the shower, it's when we inspect each other's bodies. And I think I've just got lucky. I haven't seen anything, but I look every single time. And that was actually, I got that lesson from.
So the inspection has been working.
Yeah, it was from a friend of mine that works in the adult industry. And we were intimate together. And I was like, hey, how do you know? Like, because they have, I mean, I've had 1,000 partners, they've had more. And I was like, how do you not get STDs? And they're like, well, first of all, we have to get testing. But anyway, long story short, so she says, yeah, we always check each other's genitals first. I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. And there's other elements, like the kind of people that I'm attracted to, tend to be the kind of people that are more likely to get STD testing, right? So I've had sex with a large number of adult performers, mm-hmm. And adult performers get tested regularly. I've had sex with women that are dancers for a living, and women who are dancers for a living, an STD can impact their finances because you get unique smells that deter customers. And so, again, we see regular STD testing.
You also are having relationships with people that you're able to have very honest conversations with. I get a sense that if someone's not open with their communication, you're probably not going to be that drawn to that type of person.
Like I said, I was kind of saying it as a joke, but anyone who, when I'm just messaging them online, doesn't fit the format of what I like to see. So, for example, someone like, we're probably going to have sex. To me, that actually reads as an STD. So one of the reasons that I wouldn't jump on board is somebody who's willing to say she's going to have sex with me based purely on my physical looks.
Yeah.
When we haven't had enough of a discussion, lets me know that something's wrong. Yeah. And that is often, and I've learned this through the years, that the people that have STDs, especially, pretty bad ones, tend to be a lot more quick about getting into bed because they want that normalcy, and they don't want the conversation to come up. And the more you get used to talking to somebody. So, everyone that I'm meeting, I'm telling them cleanly, I'm in a relationship. I live with the mother of my children. I'm in a polyamorous relationship. I was in a relationship with the other mother of my children. And there are many other women that I'm seeing. And it's great because they go, oh, that's unique. But you come to it from this place of honesty. And, right now I'm batting almost 100 for a woman being like, I'm down to go for a coffee anyway. Like, I'm down to...
A lot of people are afraid of judgment. So even if it's their desire to do polyamory or to explore polyamory, they will often assume that that's going to be an outrageous thing to suggest to a new partner they're dating. And therefore, it's better for them to just keep it private so that they don't get rejected or the person doesn't think they're weird or something. And then they don't ever really try to negotiate that situation, even if they think it might be right for them.
Yeah, I think exactly. And a lot of women, especially nowadays, like, they want to explore their sexuality. They want to try being more free and being more adventurous, but they want to do it in an environment with somebody where they feel safe. And, a key element of that, when they first meet somebody who's got the confidence to state the truth right off the bat, to know that I might not get them and they may not want to be with me, and I have no fear about that. It doesn't matter to me if I do or don't get them because I don't know them, and if they're not rejecting me, they don't know me. And if I'm not right for somebody, that's great. I don't want to be right for them. I don't want to force myself on somebody that isn't interested.
What advice would you give to someone who is thinking of exploring polyamory, but they don't quite know how to start bringing this up with people that they're dating or in a relationship with?
Yeah, it's tough. I always say to people, if you're already in a relationship, saying let's explore polyamory is kind of like a way of killing the relationship.
Yeah, it's quite extreme, right?
On this. And I'm like, look, introducing polyamory when you're already in a relationship needs to come slowly over lots of very long conversations. And I actually recommend people go on vacation to Amsterdam first and pay for it. And I'm like, you should try that first. I'm like, go somewhere where it's safe, go somewhere where it's legal, make a vacation of it where there's no impact on your social life, where you're never going to see them again. And just go and just see if sex with somebody else ruins what you've got, because you can recover.
Are they supposed to be honest about that? Or are you recommending that they kind of do that behind their partner's back?
No. I recommend that they do it together. And that's like a very good, so everyone knows what's going on. And get a random partner that they don't
have to see again.
Yeah, because by paying for it, you're essentially paying to make sure there's no emotional fallout from the other person, from the third person. And in doing so, like, they're not like, hey, why didn't you call me back? Like, when you're paying for it, you can say to the person, hey, we want to explore sleeping with other people. We're concerned about jealousy. And, adult professionals, they tend to be very good at, okay, I get it. I understand what we're trying to achieve here. Let me help, right? So I often recommend to couples, that's how you start. Then if you're single, it's easier but scarier, because if you're single, the correct thing to do is to state, I am polyamorous, not I want to be, not I like sleeping with other people, not I can't do commitment. I'm actually very committed. Like I said, I'm definitely seeing multiple people and I'm committed to all of them. I'm just polyamorous. So I am intimate with all of them and communicative with all of them and spend time talking to all of them. And that's the art
I think
to
that's
it.
really good advice for someone who's like confused about how to broach this topic with people. For them to say, I am polyamorous, and for them to be very certain about that means that the new partner they're dating is like, oh, I've just met someone, they are polyamorous, and not they're really confused about what they want and they want to experiment with polyamory and try this and it might all fail. Whereas the I am polyamorous is so definite that if you're presenting that with so much confidence, then this other person can make an informed decision about whether they want to be with you.
Yeah, exactly. It's so key. And like, I actually don't enjoy the polyamorous community personally. I understand it serves a purpose, but it's not something I enjoy interacting with. And I have a lot of students that are like, I want to be polyamorous, so I'm going to join the polyamory community. And I'm like, I don't advise it. Nobody I'm dating right now, with the exception of one person, would identify as polyamorous before we met. And yet now they're all open to it at least. And there was one woman that was like, yeah, she goes, I just thought you were nuts and wanted to cheat and didn't know how to say it. And I was like, whatever, you're hot, I'll cheat with you. And then she's like, and now I'm dating you. She's like, no, I get it. You're polyamorous. She was like, you fall in love with everyone all the time. She's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And she's like, and she's not, you know, she's monogamous for sure. But it's cool because I'm dating someone who cleanly says she's monogamous and yet is completely okay with the fact that I'm polyamorous because we've discussed it, because we know the criteria. And there's definitely been, you know, moments where, you know, where this particular person has struggled with jealousy, but through communication and talking, and we're still seeing each other.
Do you find that polyamorous is a much more helpful term for you because you do fall in love with these people compared to other terms such as open relationship and consensual non-monogamy?
Yeah, for me, it's actually not really about sex. It is about love. It's funny. Eve calls me a love slut. She's like, you're such a love slut. She goes, you just love loving people. And I do. I love it. I love caring about people and being cared for by people. I love it. And that's probably based on the fact that when I was a kid, it was so hard to find and there were so many negative experiences, and I want to give people positive experiences.
Yeah. And it's important for you to be able to have the freedom to fall in love with more than one person at one time.
And my life's great.
It sounds like through adversity and through going through such hard times, you managed to create something that is amazing. And if you
Thank
had
you.
A normal, ordinary life, I don't think you would be living the life that you're living now.
Yeah, I agree.
Where can people find out more information about what you are doing?
Thanks. Yeah, so we have a website called askthedatingcoach.com. And Ask the Dating Coach, it's literally that. You can go there and there's a ton of free material. You can just go and start reading about our methods, what we teach. But you can also, you know, contact us and ask the dating coach a question. At the moment, at the time of filming, questions are free. We're getting swamped, so we're going to start charging for them soon. But I suspect that there's at least a couple of months that people will be able
Amazing.
To
Amazing. People can
to
ask you absolutely anything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.